Thank you for joining me for another Quick Hits Conversation. I'm Dr. Robin. With me today, I have Frank Galindo, Philip Tate, and Brett McCall. The question I want to ask is, what makes something bullying? Philip, can you kick us off?
Sure, Robin. Thanks for the invite, as always. When you gave me the topic, I think what most people associate with bullying is school age, playground, school bus, you know, where kids are kind of learning to use their power, if you will, whether it's physical strength or popularity, you know, mean girls, all that sort of stuff. I think everyone at some point in time has probably experienced that. But I think we should probably dig in a little bit more to, you know, adults face bullying. Unfortunately, in its worst case, it probably can rise to something violent in the workplace. You certainly hope that's not the case. Like those kids on the playground or even riding on the school bus, bullying behavior, you know, it can be verbal abuse, it can be physical assault, you know, what have you. And I think when we think about adults, it can impact any number of people. But I looked at the website before we started here on stopbullying.gov, and they talked about the risk for fatal violence being greater for workers who are in sales and protective services, so security or police type work, and transportation. I know we had a bus driver here in Charlotte that was killed by a passenger just a couple of weeks ago, and it was an enormous furor here. And then even folks in healthcare, certainly social workers, people like that too.
Yeah, you used an interesting word, power, Phil. When you mentioned the use of power, it could be at any level. It could be any group, a social group, even within a social group. It doesn't have to be two different people per se in that sense. But it's definitely something that it becomes bullying is the question. When you have that aggression, intimidation, when someone feels overpowered and uncomfortable, and they just feel like they're being belittled and being felt, being made to feel less than the person who is, in this case, the aggressor, right? That's in my mind, because otherwise everything is on a level playing field. Everyone's being nice, peaceful conversations, cordial disagreements even. But once you step over that line and you begin to really put that person beneath you by a verbal, physical altercations or verbal abuse, that's in my mind when it starts to become bullying. And once other people jump in, it just makes it even that much worse.
Mm. I'll go.
Good. You're next. Tell us, Brett, what do you think?
Well, so the first thing, I think I hear a theme between Philip and Frank, that there's like when people are being treated less than human, like when we can reduce someone to less than our own. But I think that there's actually a bigger issue with that. And it is, like the answer's in the question. Anything that's less than human, we belittle. We tend to do that. We do that to nature. We do it to animals. We do it like we could go on and on and on about the way anything that's not human is already less than us and less important and gets less value or whatever. So already we're in a mess because we already have this like preconceived notion that something that's not human is less than me. And so we gotta address that. Like you can't, I don't think we can avoid the sort of big elephant in the room that is like already we're an anthropocentric language, culture, you know, like that we just have all these systems that get in our way. But that seems to be the theme that I'm noticing is just that if we can then reduce someone who does have human status because they look like us or whatever, they look similar enough, then we can then play above them the way they're saying. And it's a power grab. And I think that it's dangerous. It's really, really dangerous.
So who gets to decide if something's bullying? I feel like there's three sides kind of to this. There's the person being bullied, there's the person doing the bullying, and there's the people watching the bullying. And I know a lot when I was a child, I was often told, you're too sensitive. I was just joking. And looking back, I'm like, nope, that was bullying. That was not me being too sensitive. So I feel like, and you guys can jump in, tell me if you feel differently. I feel like the person being bullied, the person who is being treated less than gets to say, hey, I'm being treated less than, that's not okay with me. Do you guys disagree with that? I think that's spot on.
I think, you know, the word we've not articulated yet, but it's all around this conversation is respect. Respectful dialogue, respectful communication. I'm in communication. I think Frank is too. And it's all about respect, respecting other people, respecting other points of view.
I do want to jump in and point out one interesting thing about the word respect. Mm-hmm. It's used in two different ways. Mm-hmm. It's used to mean either treat as human or treat as authority. And sometimes people will say, if you don't respect me, I won't respect you. And what they mean is, if you don't treat me as an authority, I will not treat you as human.
That's a good point. I had a boss when I was in college, work study program, working in an athletic department. And this guy was all the time saying, I demand that you respect me. And it's kind of like, you know, it'd be better if that were earned in terms of how you treat me and others in the office. But again, I think that's a very good point. But coming at it from a perspective of respectful communication is at least a starting point.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to jump in as well with the line of respect. When the person being bullied, Dr. Robin, to your point, to Phil's point, if the other person doing the bullying doesn't have enough respect for my feelings, if I say, listen, I'm not comfortable with that, or I don't like what you're saying, or I don't like what you're doing, mm-hmm. and the person just continues on, that's why I agree with you, Dr. Robin, that it's the person who is receiving that gets to decide when it is. You know, again, especially when you've drawn the line and communicated your feelings and it's being ignored. Right. Mm. And that environment that was created, that hostile environment that was created by that other individual continues. That's when, you know, we kind of dive into the realm of bullying.
So when is it the responsibility of a third party to step in?
That's a good question.
Because if it's my responsibility as the bully to say, hey, I'm being bullied. And then obviously if the bully chooses not to respect that, at what point do I, as a third party, say, oh, that's bullying, I should step in?
It's a really good question. I mean, I'm still a little bit stuck on the who gets to decide, because I can feel bullied and you can have no intention of dehumanizing me or any of the things that we just mentioned. Like, I can mm-hmm. feel that way and it not be your intent, which right. ought to be something that we can then explore. Like, hey, I feel bullied or I feel unsafe. Yeah, like, let's have a conversation right. about it. Mm-hmm. So even before there's a third party, I think between the two parties, the bullied and the bully, it needs to be safe to even say, wait a second, something's off. Like, let's, once that, like, if that's available, then great. Then I think between the two parties, there's room. I mm-hmm. think the third party, the observer, is where, when those two people can't resolve it or can't see it, then the person who's the bullied, that one can say, help, like, I don't feel safe and I don't feel heard. And that is the time when a moderator can come in and facilitate empathy, facilitate an opportunity for both to get on the same page.
And as a third party, do you have to wait for somebody to say help?
I think sometimes that third party observer can be very helpful in that regard to maybe help bridge that gap. It's hard. It's difficult to do.
Right. Because you're relying on these bystanders to have empathy, right? Mm-hmm. And to understand what it is to feel the way that the person receiving this behavior is feeling, to be able to have the courage to step in and say something, do something.
And yeah, you'll see the other side of it where people pile on. Sorry, Brett, go
right.
ahead.
Right. Well, no, that's exactly where I was going. Dr. Robin, was like, we see, or I get, maybe it's just in movies, I don't know. I felt bullied when I was a young person and I felt like my friends piled on with the bully. And there's, mm-hmm. you know, this notion of like fight. Oh, like we have a hunger in our culture to see things attacked. And I don't really understand that. Like, I'm mm-hmm. by default a peacemaker. Mm-hmm. And I think another piece of this is like, what happens when the person who the bullied is claiming, oh, I feel bullied, but the observer doesn't really see it that way, doesn't see empathetically, mm-hmm. like maybe that bullied person needs to work on something, needs to experience this and go through it. Like, yeah. So there's a lot of pieces that are bubbling up here.
Yeah. Hence the question, like, what makes something bullying? Who gets to choose that? And how do we have conversations? And I think that's part of it, right? Is it has to be a conversation. If you're not having a conversation, then people cannot feel safe. And I think that's the biggest problem that we're seeing here.
Yeah.
Well,
the passive aggressive ones are tough.
This is obviously a super, super impressive topic, because that is our 10 minutes and I'm going to have to cut us off there. So thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I don't feel bullied. I hope you don't either. And I look forward to talking to each of you again really soon.